This episode is sponsored by Bubs Naturals, yet another company that I tracked down to bring on as a sponsor because I myself love their products. They are offering you, the audience of the Behind the Shield podcast, a 20% discount. But before we get to that, I do want to highlight a few of the products that I use myself. Firstly, collagen. I am about to turn 50, and so my hair, my skin, my nails, not really a big concern when I was younger, definitely a lot more of a concern now. However, where I've really seen the impact is joint health and gut health, and I've been blown away that when I'm consistent using collagen, Bubs collagen in this case, I see a massive improvement in both. Another area, I drink coffee, love coffee, and in the morning I use the Halo Creamer. Now, originally I used the MCT oil powder, but now they have the Halo Creamer, which has also got grass-fed butter in it, a lot more creamy if you're not trying to go for the vegan option that they have as well. Now, it's important to mention as well the altruistic element of Bubs Naturals. The origin story involves Glenn Bub Doherty, one of the two Navy SEALs killed in Benghazi, and a good friend of the founders, Sean and TJ. So 10% of every single sale goes towards the Glenn Doherty Foundation. Now, as I mentioned before, they are offering you, the audience, 20% off your purchase if you use the code SHIELD. That's S-H-I-E-L-D at bubsnaturals.com. And finally, if you want to hear more about their products and Glenn's powerful story, listen to episode 558 with co-founder Sean Lake. Welcome to the Behind the Shield podcast. As always, my name's James Gearing, and this week it is my absolute honor to welcome on the show rapper turned comedian A Hood. Now, in this conversation, we discuss a host of topics from his childhood in Shreveport, Louisiana, the importance of mentorship and parenting, the factors contributing to our young people leaning into gang culture, his discovery of social media, his mission to use kindness and compassion and comedy to bring people back together again, and so much more. Now, before we get to this incredible conversation, as I say every week, please just take a moment. Go to whichever app you listen to this on, subscribe to the show, leave feedback, and leave a rating. Every single five-star rating truly does elevate this podcast, therefore making it easier for others to find. And this is a free library of well over 1,100 episodes now. So all I ask in return is that you help share these incredible men and women's stories so I can get them to every single person on planet Earth who needs to hear them. So with that being said, I introduce to you A Hood. Enjoy. Well, A Hood, I want to start by saying thank you so much for taking the time and coming on the Behind the Shield podcast today.
Yes, sir. It's a pleasure being here.
So where on planet Earth are we finding you this afternoon?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Yeah, so where are you right now? Where in the States?
Oh, yeah, I'm in Texas.
Beautiful. Well, I'd love to start at the very beginning of your timeline, of your life. So tell me where you were born and tell me a little bit about your family dynamic, what your parents did, how many siblings.
Well, I was born and raised in Louisiana, Shreveport to be exact. I'm a family. My mama had 9 kids, so I come from a big family. I know, you know, that's why I get along with kids because, you know, I got a sister that's 8, you know what I'm saying? And I'm finna be 35. So I come from a big family, so I know how to socialize with people. That's one of the pluses of coming from a big family. You get what I'm saying? I got 2 kids. I got a daughter, 17, love her to death. She was the one who introduced me to the internet world. And I have a 7-year-old son. Like I say, I'm an all-American. If you ask me anything, I'm an open book.
Well, you're 1 of 9. I'm 1 of 5 kids, so I'm this large-ish family myself. So where right. Do you sit? Are you the oldest brother or are you a little bit lower down?
I'm next to the oldest. I'm next to the oldest. It's seven after me.
Okay. That's the same as me. I'm the second oldest brother, but second oldest kid. So we're right in the same pecking order.
Okay.
So talk to me about Shreveport back then. What was the environment like? You know, what were you kind of growing up as far as the positive and the negative role models around you?
Oh, Shreveport, man, it's rough all the way around. It's growing up in Shreveport was rough. I always had an ambition. I can tell you that. I always had an ambition. As a little boy, you know, a pupil, I had dreams of wanting to be famous, you know. Even when I couldn't be famous, I go around the little neighborhood, because we stayed in apartments too. So I cut grass in the local neighborhood. When we stayed in apartment complexes, I had a nice little clientele. I walk over there and ask them, I'd be like, man, every week, can I take your trash out? You know what I'm saying? And they pay me. A lot of people don't want to walk to that dumpster. You know, I always had a hustler's ambition. Growing up in Shreveport, it's a lot of gun violence, you know, and they don't care who it is. You know, you make a name for yourself, you a target. You got more than the next person, you a target. You just want to be left alone, you a target. So I left because at some point I was becoming a target.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? I just ain't want to be another statistic.
When you look back now, what were the reasons? What were the background reasons that neighborhood was so dangerous?
Gangs. Like, we got a different set of gangs. The way Shreveport worked, our gangs go by neighborhoods. You know, we got gangs that a lot of people never even heard of. You know, Four Babies. You got Chasers. And they all break down into different neighborhoods. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. One thing I can say is, right now in today's time, it's trying to do a turnaround, but it's so bad right now that Trump is finna send the U.S. Army down to help, literally, Shreveport. You know, it ain't got just that bad.
Yeah. See, as a firefighter paramedic, you know, I got to see a lot of neighborhoods, some in California, some in Florida, where I worked on both sides. And you see how that's a vicious circle, that cycle, you know, of you know, gang membership and addiction and, you know, poverty that just keeps turning and turning and turning. And if you go far enough back in the history, the prohibition of drugs, making addiction illegal, created a business for slinging dope, you know, in the underworld, as it were.
Right.
And now it's interesting. I mean, you know, as you smoke and I sit here talking, my community is starting to realize that psilocybin, you know, mushrooms, MDMA, ecstasy, are healing us for PTSD. So the very laws that, you know, reefer madness and a lot of those which are actually founded on racism that have created the violence that you experienced as a young boy and I saw in uniform, now we're starting to see that turning around and cannabis being legalized and MDMA and, you know, and psilocybin, right, and some of these other ones. So I'm hoping that when that starts to really shift, that will help start to take power away from gangs pulling, you know, young boys and girls into it, and then they go towards a more positive direction.
So with me, little backstory about my mom and where my message come from. I was very rebellious. You know, my mama tell me, don't do something, I do it. My mama told me, my mama is one of the most racist mothers you can run across. You know, and she always had this slogan, if she can't use a comb, don't bring her home. And I did the complete opposite. You know, and they don't understand, a lot of my viewers they don't really understand that you don't have to what you was grew up in is not what you have to go by when you grow out.
Absolutely.
When you venture out in that world, your choices are yours.
Yeah, 100%. And this is even from the trauma side. I've been talking about this a lot recently. Whatever you were raised in, you know, so it could be anything from being exposed to drugs, you know, gangs, domestic violence, you know, whatever the things are, regardless of where you live, you could be, you know, on the poverty line or living in a mansion. It's the same kind of thing. But there's generational trauma. And the moment, exactly what you're talking about, the moment you and I, as we sit here now, can look and say, okay, these were the things that happened to me when I was a kid. And these are the things that happened to my mom or my dad when they were kids. And you start seeing those dominoes, then you can stop it. Then you can stop your 17-year-old and your 7-year-old having the same kind of things forced on them.
Right.
So what about your dad? Was you mentioned obviously your mother so far. Was your dad in the picture?
Yeah, I grew up with both parents. Oh, my dad, that's my best fucking friend.
Tell me about
it. That's my best fucking friend. Like, he just called me to introduce me to his girlfriend. They've been dating 3 months, and I told him, you know, because I told him, I'll let you meet the girl I've been dating in 3 months, you know, because that ain't the type of relationship we got. Man, let me see, you know, like we got that type of relationship. Like my pops, that's my world, you know, like, and a lot of people probably wouldn't understand that, or a lot of people would, but my dad has been there, you know, and I'm sorry for the people that didn't have theirs, but yeah.
And what was he doing as a profession, as a career?
Well, he worked for the city of Shreveport. He'd been working for the city of Shreveport for over 30 years.
Doing what?
Working on the streets and drainage.
Okay, beautiful. So what was about him? You know, talk to me about the values that he imparted, because like you said, and I've heard this on so many people that be on the show so far, you know, I had a dad that was present, like physically present, mm-hmm. but emotionally not so, you know, so it was a kind of a strange dichotomy. He was there, but he wasn't there. Right. A lot of people on the show that went into the military and the first responders and other areas, you know, a lot of them didn't have, you know, parents. They were absent in one way, shape, or form. And therefore, they were looking out into the community for a mentor. And some of them, it might be a bad mentor first. It might be someone in the gangs. And then eventually, it might be a teacher, army recruiter, whoever it was. But there's a lot to be said about the mother, the fathers that are there, because that is the answer, you know, is us trying to reform these homes and raise our children to feel loved and feel secure. So what was it about your father with 9 children? How was he able to kind of steer you in this positive direction?
Well, you know, you got good apples and you got bad apples. So before I answer that question, I want to tell you, the brother that's above me and the brother that's right under me are both in jail for the same murder charge. They became a statistic. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? My other two brothers took to my mom, and I just took to my dad. My dad, he been working for as long as I can remember. You know, I got my first job at Raising Cane's 3 days after my 16th birthday. So, and I've been working ever since. You see what I'm saying? He funny. People love him. And I can call him and I can joke about it, you know, and we can play. You know, my dad, if I call him right now, he gonna say, you already know Cub, Five Deuce, Hoover. That's a gang. I say, Pop, you're 50 fucking five. How? Don't you've had a job for 30 plus years. How are you a gangbanger, bro? I ain't never known a gangbanger hold a job for 30 plus years. They can't even live 30 plus years.
Mm-hmm.
You got a family. That don't sound like a gangbanger. Gangbangers build family in the streets. It's a difference. Mm-hmm. But I can joke about him with those things. You know what I'm saying? And we laugh, and he just, He's just a good person to be around.
Sounds like it. Well, what about when you were in the school ages? What were you playing as far as sports or exercise?
Honestly, I ran track. And I was in gymnastics. I can really turn flips, like backhand springs. But other than that, I was a troubled child in school. I found track to get me out of debt, but then I just got so many bad memories of my mom because she stopped me from doing that because she didn't want to go to the other school and get my brothers and sisters while she was at home. So I didn't too much have a social life. I did a lot of running away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that must have been hard with 9 kids trying to give them positive outlets, you know, sports, whatever it was. But I mean, right, with 9 of them, especially the way I know American sports are here, you know, with the costs and, as you said, all the different events and locations, I mean, that must have been a nightmare with 9 of you.
Right. But we also lived a good life, though. You know, like I say, my dad, he's been working for as long as I can remember. We grew up in a medium, not no high living, not poverty, but, you know, I had every new game system that came out. But, yeah, they divorced now, though, but.
So what about career aspirations? What were you dreaming of becoming when you were in the high school?
On somebody's television. You know, I always want to be on somebody's television. I'm going to be on somebody's television one day.
And who were your heroes at that point? Who were you wanting to emulate? Who was on television?
Lil Wayne. You know, I wanted to be a rapper. You know, that was my first thing, a rapper. That didn't make it far. I learned real hard. If you're truly good at something, you don't have to work hard to be good at it. You know, a lot of people be rapping for 30 years, ain't went nowhere. But then somebody that come along in 6 months and can surpass you. So. Yep. I decided to choose a different route around 2019. And then that's when I fell into the comedy.
So talk to me about that. Which route did you take? And then how did that lead you to comedy?
I took the rapping route. I lived in Atlanta. Me and this rapper, I don't know if you ever heard of them, Boosie, LaBoosie, and LaWebby. They from Louisiana, but they big too. I got locked in with them in Atlanta. They shot my video, you know, it did numbers. But then me and my son mama, she left me for somebody else, cold turkey. Like, it was out of the blue. I came home from work and she was gone. And so I took my son and we moved back to Louisiana. I left the music alone. My mama let me stay, but she also make it uncomfortable, impossible to live there. Right. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I moved to Missouri. My daughter called, and she was like, "Dad, this new app out, TikTok. I want to be TikTok famous. Can you help me?" I'm like, I'm living with somebody. I'm working at Sonic. And I'm a full-time dad, single. So, and I was like, no. I got real life to deal with. She got mad. Didn't want to call me. Didn't want to talk to me for 2 months. And then she called back. And she was like, "Dad, you got my brother staying with you, right?" I said, "Yeah, you know this." She was like, "And the only thing I'm asking you to do is download this app to bond with me. And you can't do that, but you got my brother 24/7. I downloaded the app, hands down question, you know. So She teaching me. You know, we doing these TikTok dances. You know, that's why I learned this little move right here. Oh, oh. She taught me that. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, she got grounded. I got addicted to the app, you know, but she got grounded. I'm up there. But this time, I'm calling her. I'm like, what's the new dance we finna do? You know? And I ain't had it. Yeah, because she got grounded for like 3 months. Her phone was suspended from social media. So I felt like, dang, I got to find something else to do. I'm like, do I want to do the music? Do I want to go back to the music? I'm like, no, I feel like I got to work too hard for that. And then I was like, my family always told me I was extra funny. And I said, I'm just give it a try. So I started doing lip syncs. Funny comedians, Lavelle Crawford, Kevin Hart, and I said, this ain't gonna get me nowhere. I want to be more creative. So I started doing these skits by myself. Then I moved to Ohio, Springfield, Ohio, during the wintertime. And I remember walking on the porch, and I was like, I'm waiting on, it's snowing. It's like 3 inches. And I'm like, oh man, I need somebody to come down the street so I can ask them this question about this lady that I saw. Her name was Ro Vicky. And because she got out of the store, she was like, the Shell Malone, anybody want something from the Shell Malone? And I was like, I don't see nobody. So fuck, I was just like, okay. So I walked to the porch and I was like, hey, hood. Y'all ever heard of a Sound Malone? And it just took off from there. You know, during those times, they didn't have community guidelines, so it wasn't nothing considered harassment or bullying. But when they created the guidelines, then my page, all the videos started coming down for harassment and bullying. So my page got banned at 1.5 million followers. A lot of money was in that account. And I fell off the app for like 2 or 3 years. Got into some legal trouble. And I'm back. I was incarcerated probably about a year and a half. And I came back then, took a little longer break. And then I just been back maybe about a year, year and a half. And then here I am.
Well, going back to first getting TikTok, up to that point, had you used social media like Instagram, Facebook, any of the less TikTok-y apps?
Didn't care too much for Facebook until recently. Didn't care too much for Instagram until recently. Because I feel like they both hard to grow on. And I blinked twice, and the following just was like, voila. So I got to entertain them too, you know.
Well, talk to me about your livelihood being kind of interwoven into social media, because you and I spoke the other day, and I lost my account. And I think, in all honesty, even though they said it was a copyright thing, it was kind of earlier with the whole Gaza issue, and I had guests on and, you know, was talking about that, because I think that, you know, when tens of thousands of children are killed, it's a bad thing. And obviously that wasn't a popular opinion back then for some reason. And yeah, I had, I think, 220,000 people on Instagram, and then boom, it was gone. No appeal, nothing, just gone. Right. Now, I didn't monetize that, but it was right when I released my book last year, right when it happened. So all the potential, you know, exposure for a book that's helped a lot of people was just taken away from me. So talk to me about, you know, how you built up the financial side and what some of this, you know, the overextension of rules and that closing down, how that affected you financially, because this is an important, you know, if people are putting out truly hateful stuff, of course, their account needs to get taken down. Right. So many people's accounts are removed you know, early in COVID because they said that masks don't work or whatever. But masks don't work. You know what I mean? They were telling the truth.
Right. When I lost the account, I can't say that it impacted me financially because I lost it while I was in incarceration. You get what I'm saying? So, you know, it ain't like, of course, I came home and had to start over and build the brand again. And I can say, yeah, it changed my lifestyle when I came home. But I've always had something to fall back on. I have a culinary arts training. You know, I've cooked for Trey Songz because I've worked for places like Copeland's Cheesecake Factory, Texas Roadhouse, Ernie's. These are, you know, I had my fair share, you know, of being around, you know. But other than that, like I said, I've always had something to fall back on.
Well, before you were talking about doing the lip sync and that kind of thing, it seems, correct me if I'm wrong, that this kind of, you know, 2.0 A-hood, there's a message of kindness and community and pulling people together. So where did that come from?
Okay. I told myself that I was nervous at first because I was like, okay, what if they get up here and, you know, crucify me for this? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But then I was like, it's always somebody out there somewhere that feel like you do. You know what I'm saying? So my objective is to take the power from the words. You know, if the African-American Black community hear you say what I say, they'll have a different story for you. But if it's coming from me, they left confused. You see what I'm saying?
I do.
Now, one day I'm gonna wake up and it's gonna be people like you and me uplifting each other. You see what I'm saying? So, man, I woke up one day and I thought to myself and I was like, we need our own word. The first video that I made, I said, I'm gonna only say this one and one time only. If it ain't white, it ain't right. And that took off. Okay. Have you ever heard of Clayton Bigsby?
I have, yes.
So I started doing a couple of Clayton Bigsby skits.
And that's Dave Chappelle, isn't it? The Klan member, the blind Klan member.
Yeah. So my objective was to draw as many people that I can that thinks it's funny, whatever, whatever. I don't care the color. And then flip it. Then that's when Knacker Nation came about. You see what I'm saying? So I made a video saying, if I'm your nip and you my crop, then why together we can't be some knackers? It's only right.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
And then you start seeing more people joining, more people joining. Now it's becoming a movement. It's a family. It's not a trend. It's a way of life.
What's really sad, as we sit here recording now, I think it was about 3 or 4 days ago, that poor Ukrainian woman was stabbed in Charlotte, North Carolina by a Black passenger that sat right behind her. And it has become, again, depending on what you allow yourself to see and which news outlet you consider as, you know, your Bible, a kind of race conversation. And clearly it's a mental health conversation. If a human being sitting behind someone else on a train decides to stab them in the neck, that's not about color, creed, sexual orientation. It's about mental ill health, you know?
Right.
And so I see this, I almost feel like it's a desperate attempt, because I think this division is starting to fail. I think people, exactly like you're saying, are realizing that in their schools, in their communities, in their workplaces, they work with people of all colors, creeds, backgrounds, and, you know, they get on really well.
Right.
So I feel like that, for example, is one of these things thrust into us again, like, oh, don't forget that, you know, the black people do this and the white people do that. And I think it's bullshit. I really do. And so I don't know what your perspective is, but I think there's a huge awakening now for what I always say is like the 80% in the middle that aren't racist on one side or racist on the other, or, you know, whatever, extremists. The 80%, right, the majority that are just sick and tired of this divisive rhetoric and you know, want to have that conversation. Like, hey, we do all, this is the United States of America. We do all get along.
Right. And I think that's the reason why they're trying to remove TikTok, because a lot of people is learning different ways of life. You see what I'm saying? Through their mobile device. You see what I'm saying? Like, to us, it's a security. They saying it's a security risk. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But, you know, I can be honest, like, everybody here, what is we only reporting what we see.
I mean, if you want to flip it around, if you want to get, you know, down to the bottom of it, it's a security risk if you have a government of either side that's allowed the country to get fatter and sicker, that's allowed our schools to become a place where shootings are occurring. You know, a common occurrence that have allowed gangs to thrive because of drug prohibition. I mean, the greatest threat to national security is our government at the moment, not someone from overseas.
Right. They doing it right under our nose. You know, so, but honestly, me personally, I feel like if I sit back, you asked me, you didn't know my thoughts on the, you know, the black and the whites and the, you know, the Mexicans. And my thing is, I have seen the slavery movies. Okay. I've seen what happened. My thing is, I'm not finna prosecute a person for something they never had to endure. And they was born in the same time we was born in, had nothing to do with these things. If I treat a person accordingly to how they treat me, you see what I'm saying? I can go in, some of my best friends are white. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I got some best friends is black. Like, I got some best friends is Mexican. Maybe one of them, but, you know, but I treat a person accordingly to how they treat me. Like, the very thing that we preach about and we talk about is what we do every day. It's racism in every race. No matter what it is, you got bad judges, you got good judges. You got bad lawyers, you got good lawyers. You got bad doctors, you got good doctors. The world revolves around good and bad. My analogy, if you go to the grocery store, and this is for the police officers, that's why I say I bag the blue, only the good, not the bad. You see what I'm saying? Because if I go to the grocery store and I buy a dozen of eggs and three of them eggs is bad and the rest of them thing good, all other nine good, what you going to do? You going to throw the whole thing away? Nah, you going to throw them three eggs out. You going to cook them other nine. So work with what you got. We'll cross that bridge when somebody treats me according to my color and not my personality.
Yeah. Well, I think this is the thing as well with history. And again, I'm British. So my nation or people leaders of my nation have done horrible things around the world. They colonized 2/3 of the world at one point. And even though there are some beautiful side effects, if you go to London these days, you know, you'll see the whole world represented. You know, if you go to Heathrow Airport, it's, you know, African dress and Indian and, you know, all over the world. And these are all British people coming home. So, you know, that there's an upside to some of this because we can't go back and change it. But acknowledging history is extremely important. Remembering history, you know, we have to remember history. Otherwise, we make the same mistake over and over again. But that's different than continuing a victimhood, as you said, generations later. I learned, you know, recently that at the height of slavery, when the British were the ones that were buying the slaves from the African tribes and then basically trading them with the Americans, so they came home with tobacco and clean hands. That was when the British people were at some of their poorest ever. So some people were making a shitload of money, but the country wasn't. You know what I mean? So the moment you kind of broad brush everyone, this is where we get into trouble. And if you take a step back and you look at the horrible things that have happened in history, usually it's a few people, you know, in the government, in businesses, whatever it is, and everyone else has to pay the price. So the way we really turn things around is, as you said, we all stand by side by side. Someone made a comment on the interview a few months ago and said, if you think about a medieval castle, like the old, you know, old British Robin Hood type time, and you've got the peasants in the village arguing with each other. You told them that, oh, they're the bad guys and they're the bad guys. He said, well, then where are you not looking? At the castle. And this is the point. Don't get me wrong. There are some great countries with great leaders around the world, but the bad ones will keep dividing, keep reminding, oh, you know, you're black, I'm white, you're gay, I'm straight, whatever the thing is. And then you're creating that tension to take the eyes off where we should be looking, the safety of our schools, the quality of our food, you know, the purity of our water, all these things that affect every single person, whether you're, again, any color, creed, sexual orientation.
Right. I agree. I concur. At the end of the day, what we stand for is family, unity, color don't matter. Okay. And a lot of people wouldn't understand when I say if it wasn't for Jazzy, Beauty, Peaches, Tony, Virgo. These are people that actually got behind the content, the brand, and helped push it to become what it is. You see what I'm saying?
I do.
So when you got a solid team behind you, like I said, I'll be the face of the movement, even though I feel like somebody should have said this a long time ago.
I can relate to that completely. I've always said, how come a guy with very limited intelligence that came from, you know, across the ocean from the UK can figure out some of this stuff, but the people that we pay a lot of money don't? You know, I mean, if you think about the amount of money that's out there, we should be living harmoniously. The rest of the world should be dreaming of coming to America because everyone's healthy and the schools are safe and, you know, the environment is protected. Right. But, you know, it's not. So if you look at a movement, more often than not, it's people that were sick and tired of watching, you know, pain, suffering, whatever it was. And they said enough is enough. And whether it's, you know, someone creating a training company for, you know, women to help them with domestic abuse, or whether it's, you know, starting a TikTok, trying to bring people of different, you know, ethnicities back together again, it's the same thing.
Right. And I mix it with some comedy too, you know. So I get some inboxes. People be like, are you making fun of us or are you serious? I'm dead ass serious. I love everybody. I don't care who you are. If you like what I do, then we got something in common. You get what I'm saying? I have a dark sense of humor. I'm sorry. I laugh about some shit. You know what I'm saying? I I'd be playing with my homeboys. Bitch, I would crawl the back like Kunta Kinte, bitch. But that's, I play like that. That's how me and my people play. You know, like, I got a dark sense of humor. I like to laugh at the shit a lot of people wouldn't laugh about. And now that I see more than just me, got a dark sense of humor.
But I had to learn that. You ever watch South Park?
Yeah, I love that show.
That's the perfect example of using dark humor to put a point across. And I think what they do so well is they don't just make fun of people that they choose to make fun. They make fun of everyone, all of us. Right. So that way is fair. No one escapes the mirror that's held to our face.
Right. So, at the end of the day, I don't know where it's going to go, but I feel like it's going to be somewhere, you know. I enjoyed you. And can you let the people know where can they stream this at?
Yeah, you can say it now. Yep.
Let us know. How can we stream it?
Oh, this on the podcast? Yeah, for people listening, if you just basically put in Behind the Shield podcast in Google, this will pop up straight away. And if you put A Hood as well, but it will be on everything. iTunes, Spotify, I mean, anywhere. I don't do the video, I just do the audio, so they'll be able to hear it anywhere they get podcasts.
Right. Okay. So, but like I say, at the end of the day, I'm going to try. That's all I can do is try.
If you were king for a day and you could change some things that are going on at the moment, what would you change to make this mission, you know, come together for you?
Man, listen, a lot of people are going to hate me when I say this. I remove all leadership, man. I feel like we wasn't put here with leadership. I don't feel like leadership was a part of God's plan. You know, that was man-made. You know, like, we shouldn't be paying for grapes, man. Them free. He gave us to them free. You know, I'll remove all. Man, listen. I said it. Nope. I never voted. Nope. Never will. Nope. That'll be my main thing. If I was king for a day, that means when I'm not king, this is a free world.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting.
I understand we have some cuckoos out there. And a lot of people may feel like we need that. But if it's nothing, you can deal with it. You see what I'm saying? I feel like the wars and all it is, that's just a little much. I'm over here shaking in my boots behind some shit I ain't even did. You know?
So. Yeah, no, it's funny because, I mean, it kind of mirrors what I say, not no leadership, but the way that our system is designed to choose people, you have to be a millionaire or billionaire. You take money from companies that basically buy your way into being president, and you have to have no ethics because those companies, a lot of times their products kill a lot of people, tobacco, right. You know, drug companies, fast food, et cetera, right. Military, you know, weapons manufacturers, those kind of things. So yeah, I agree. I think if you look at, you know, healthy societies, usually a leader is chosen because people want that person to be in that position, not because right. They bought their way in, not because they lied their way in. And until we have something that represents that, I think people would rather just have no leader than deal with this, because we've had the left, we've had the right, And again, over tens and tens of years, we've got fatter and sicker. You know, we've got this, just when we were starting to heal and come together as a nation, I think, you know, in a couple of days is 9/12, day after 9/11. That's what you saw. America really was America. And it didn't matter what you were as far as, you know, how you looked or who you prayed to. We all came together. So, you know, I think that, yeah, we leadership would be good only if it was the kind of people that most of us truly looked up to. You know what I mean? And what should happen in an election is you'd have two people running or three people running. If one of them won, you'd be like, okay, well, that wasn't my favorite, but they're still really good. But that's not what happens. You know what I mean? So, yeah.
So, me personally, maybe not no leadership, but something different.
That's all you want, like, is just good leadership.
You know, something different. Something different, because I'm not understanding it right now.
Well, I think there's a basic kind of principle, in my opinion. Leaders bring people together. Tyrants force people apart. That's it. So if we had a good leader and we were slowly being brought together, and the leader themselves was, you know, stayed in shape and ate well and talked about mental health openly and, you know, was looking for proactive reasons to help people that are struggling and invested in communities that were, you know, maybe not as able as other areas, you know, and you're seeing this nation heal, I think a lot of people would be happy with that person being in place. But it's the basic principle. If you're not bringing the country together, if you're dividing it, then you're not a leader. You're a tyrant.
Like, I ain't never seen so many people, like, it's real life. Some people be, like, if I make a political post that's on the joking side, you got some people that will say, yep, that's them Democrats for you. Or, that's some Republican shit right there. Mm-hmm. You know, I've never seen it like, do they know that that's gang banging too? That's red and blue.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And even the legal drug companies, the same
everybody
as drug
that's
thing.
Watching this shit, you're gangbanging for the government.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you look at the model of fast food, you look at the model for prescription drugs, it's no different than what you'd see on the streets. It really isn't. You know, create an addict for life.
Right. So just keep that in mind. Y'all be over here talking about, I'm team red. Y'all talking about y'all team blue. But when you hear somebody say it in the street, your head gonna run like hell.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Absolutely. And then what do you see with those old heads and the Crips and the Bloods when they start getting into their 40s? They realize that it was crazy and they start standing side by side trying to stop kids from going in the gangs in the first place.
But it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you should have stopped it, it should have stopped with you in your younger age before they, you know, your partners. You should have stopped your partners.
Yeah.
And your partners should have stopped their partners. You know? So ain't no youngsters trying to hear what no OGs trying to say when you got NBA Youngboy and AO.
So how do we change that? I mean, I think the drug prohibition element would be huge, because if you simply couldn't make money slinging dope anymore because they were fixing people that were addicts and you could, you know, have access to pharmaceutical grade, you know, opiates or whatever it is, if you were weaning yourself off, then you'd cut the head off the snake, I think, with the drug side at least. So aside from that, how do we stop this circle of violence when it comes to gang membership?
Honestly, I feel like if it's always something. They stop this, it's gonna start a different something. You see what I'm saying? This 2025. I done seen some shit and heard some shit I ain't never even heard of before. You see what I'm saying? They can stop this and start it another way, but that only gonna make them go another way. You see what I'm saying? So let me give you an example. They made weed legal everywhere. Opiates, you know, to where, like you said, they not finna go in there and sell no motherfucking cocaine. So if they can't, if the government can't do that, then that pushes everybody that goes from that route to another avenue. It's always something. You see what I'm saying? I feel like making it legal would be doing more harm than helping, because I don't feel like marijuana tearing down the community. So I wouldn't want to mess with the people that's dealing that. You get what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Because then you will push them to do something else because they got to provide for a lifestyle that they have already accumulated. You see what I'm saying? Then whatever they promote themselves to, then we'll be tearing down the community. You get what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. See, this, you have legalization where you can, you know, go and buy it, and then you have decriminalization. And that's the model that I think is really good. They did it in Portugal. And again, like you said, marijuana, obviously, we're seeing it legalized now. Because I think the when you take a step back, yes, you can make a living selling marijuana, but how many kids that ended up in the gangs and selling, you know, whatever on the corner, were we robbing from a career to do something, you know, architect, construction, doctor, whatever? Like we stopped their potential because of the environment they were surrounded with. But what the Portugal model really is the understanding, as you said, when you start getting harder now, cocaine, you know, opiates, crystal meth, all these other illicit drugs, those are being used by people who are hurting. And so if you can pour resources into mental health, addiction counseling, job creation, housing, and you stop a lot of people from needing to fill that void with a drug specifically. And I think, you know, again, some of the therapeutic ones we talked about, that's a different conversation. Marijuana, MDMA, you know, psilocybin, these have healing properties. But, you know, with the other ones that are just destroying people, and then obviously we have opiates with fentanyl at the moment that are just snuffing people out of all colors, creeds, and ages. If you can take away some of that pain from the community, then those people stand on their own feet and they're back in the community. So your customers diminish in the illicit drug trade, you know, immensely. And that's what happened. In Portugal, they still chase the smugglers, they chase the dealers. But, you know, the users themselves, they gave them support to get them well again, because, you know, addiction is basically a sickness.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not talking about, you know, marijuana and some of these therapeutic ones. So I think that's what's interesting about that model, because if your option isn't to sell drugs anymore, and you create an infrastructure, then a lot of those young people will then go and do careers that are a lot more rewarding and don't result in, you know, dying in some god-awful drug war.
Right. So, but what about the ones that then gave up all of that without and chose it for the streets? Because a lot of these people out here want to be where they are. They don't want help.
Why do you think that is?
In Louisiana, we call it chasing a dragon. Something you saw the first time you got high. That you want to see again, that you'll never see again. You know, so you do have those, and you can pull in the resources all you want. A lot of them just won't accept it because they don't want it. They want to be carefree. They want no worries. They like where they at.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm from Louisiana, I'm from Shreveport. I see a lot of it. A lot of people like, I done seen a dude quit his job that worked with me to stand on the corner. And then when he was holding the sign, I didn't give him nothing because you was my coworker.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you quit? You see what I'm saying?
I do. And I think no, please.
I'm a realist, you know what I'm saying? I'm going to say what I feel. Like, it was no reason. We got the same 24 hours,
mm-hmm.
the same 7 days. So
I think that Other danger, though, is that there'll always be that group. There'll always be that group that you can't help, no matter how much you try. You know, whether it's people trying to stop smoking, whether it's illicit drugs, whether it's homelessness, whatever it is. But we focus on the ones that didn't work for rather than the ones that it did. And I think this is what, you know, we miss in America, you know, food stamps, you know, government housing. They always point out the people that abuse it. And like, yeah, that happens. I see it as a paramedic and firefighter in America. I saw it my whole career. But we're not looking about all of those families that it helped, that got back on their feet. You know what I mean? So I think that's the other part, is not thinking that we're going to fix everything. But we have to change the way we do it, because the way we're doing it now isn't working. I mean, it's just not.
Right. I agree. So that's why what we do is what we do.
Mm-hmm.
I believe a lot of people feel like they have some sort of freedom in what we do. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Honestly. I done seen people. I love my Caucasian people, man. I done seen them make a video saying, "Black power." And it just tickled me. You know? How can anybody hate it? Now, I'm getting special requests talking about, man, what about the Mexicans and the Indians? You know? So we gotta make sure that everybody feel welcome.
Absolutely. Well, you've obviously mentioned about, you know, the TikTok channel specifically. Where do you hope this all leads to? Is there going to be, you know, outside of social media, live comedy, you know, TV shows?
Yeah, I'm in the process of starting stand-up. Ultimately, I'm going to, my first major step and goal, I'd say, would be Wilding Out. I want to be on MTV Wilding Out.
Mm-hmm.
That's my major first step and goal. Because if I can get the audience to see me just one time, oh, I'm going to shine bright like a diamond.
All right. Well, I want to go to some closing questions, and then we'll make sure, again, everyone knows where to find you on social media. But the first question, is there a book or are there books that you love to recommend? It can be related to our discussion today or completely unrelated.
I like to read fantasy. So I love reading Twilight sagas. I love Harry Potter books. Those are my two favorite series. And these books they call hood rat novels. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Don't buy that book. Don't buy that book. A whole lot of hood stuff.
What about TV, films, or documentaries?
TV, True Blood, Orange is the New Black. Let me see. Movies. Oh, I'm an October baby. So anything horror. You know, I just watched the new Conjuring.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
I just watched Weapons. Have you seen that yet?
Mm-mm.
It's not like horror, like slasher or anything, but it's creepy as hell. It's Josh Brolin and some other people. But yeah, that's another good one. If you're into horror, watch that one too.
Okay.
Brilliant. What about documentaries? Any of those? Are you a documentary watcher?
Yeah, BMF.
BMF?
BMF.
BMF, okay.
Yeah, the Black Mafia family. Yeah. I love country music, though. Let's get that clip. But I love all music. But I got a special place in my heart for some country.
That's what we're seeing, again, back to our conversation earlier. If you look at, I mean, obviously sports teams, I mean, they're pretty diverse. And we seem to ignore that these, you know, men or women or whatever team it is, you know, play side by side and, you know, rejoice and hug each other or console each other if they've won or lost. But even in music, look at the fusions that have happened for a long time now, you know, these collaborations between these different, you know, music genres that supposedly are all black or all white, whatever. And it's bullshit.
Yeah.
they're all playing together. So.
Right. And is there so much unity in the world today, man? Like, that's why I think they're trying to remove TikTok.
Absolutely. All right. Well, the next question, is there a person that you recommend to come on this podcast as a guest to speak to the first responders, military and associated professions of the world?
Texas cop. 2.0. He's actually a police officer.
That's his social media handle? Texas Cop 2.0? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'll look him up.
He's very good.
Another one as well I'd love to get on is Lil Wayne, because if you hear him talking about the kindness of a cop when he was little, when his house was raided, and I think he was shot as well at that point. He was only a little boy. You know, again, he's been another voice of exactly what we're talking about. You know, good people, bad people, not about, you know, skin color or uniform in that case, but just who showed him kindness when everyone else was stepping over him.
And he that was a good story, too. I did hear that story.
Yeah.
That story was told on, I think, the BET Awards 1 year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was Uncle something. I forget what his name was now, but he referred to him as Uncle.
Yeah.
All right. Well, then the last question before we make sure everyone knows where to find you and your work, what do you do to decompress?
I listen to music. I play Fortnite a lot. That's where I mellow at, Fortnite.
And again, I didn't even think about that. How many people of all colors and creeds play those games side by side, talking to each other? You know what I mean?
Right.
So they may look like a dragon or whatever it is in the game, but they're not.
Like I didn't met some great people just from by playing the game.
Yeah. And you can't see them, so you're not judging on how they look or what color they are or if they're wearing a turban or a burqa. They're just. Right. Whatever character in the game, and you're talking to him.
Right.
Absolutely. All right. Well, then for people listening, the social media platforms, where are the best places to find you on all things?
Instagram and TikTok is both AYEHOOD official. One word. That's where you can find me on all platforms. And I would like to, if I missed a couple people, big ups, Tony. I love you, brother. Peaches, I love you. Jazzy, I love y'all. Thank y'all for being a part of what we do. Ginger, Cal, Michelle, Lululemon. I love y'all, man. Y'all stay up. Stay blessed. We gonna get there.
Beautiful. And if you missed anyone, I'm sure they're going to be really pissed off.
Yeah. And everybody else that I missed, please don't be pissed off.
All right. Well, I want to thank you so much. It's been such an interesting conversation. This was super organic. My wife showed me your account and I was like, this is phenomenal. Like, you just, you know, the message is positive. And I'm sure if you see mine, it's the same kind of thing. Just trying to storytell the goodness in the world. So I want to thank you so much for being so generous with your time and coming on the Behind the Shield podcast today.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me. And I will share it out and I will get my people to stream, and we will be on there.